The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. This content is created in partnership with our sponsor, NetWealth Investments Limited, ABN 85090 569 109, AFSL 230 975, and is limited to publicly available information. Before acting on any general advice, you should consider whether appropriate and obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license and does not provide any financial advice or services or endorse any general advice. If a PDS or IM exists, you should obtain a copy and review it thoroughly before making a decision.
I'm Patrick, Head of Technology at professional services firm Collins SBA. I'm a former financial advisor who just loves solving business problems and creating better client experiences using technology. Join me each week as we unpack the tech on offer to advice professionals, stay on top of tech trends, and help you break free from the analysis paralysis experience when building and maintaining a great tech stack.
Discover a world of advice. Join Matt Heiner, CEO of NetWealth, as he chats to industry professionals and thought leaders on the latest technologies, business models, changing demographic patterns, and general trends impacting wealth management. Listen at netwealth.com.au/between meetings. This ad is presented by NetWealth Investments Limited and does not consider individual circumstances. Seek professional advice and read the relevant PDS to determine if NetWealth is appropriate for you. Past performance is not a reliable indicator of future performance.
To give listeners of the Advice Tech podcast another avenue to solve technology problems that matter most and efficiently evaluate the landscape of Advice Tech providers, Ensemble has launched an Advice Tech space on its platform. If you want to know how your advice peers are solving their tech challenges, big and small, it's the place to go. Head to the Ensemble platform or use the link in the show notes to join today.
Hello, this episode is a bit different. So if you go back to episode 110, all the way back in November 2024, Aaron Breed joined me as a guest, a special guest. And at that point, we were just two tech curious operators in different firms talking about CRM automation, data cleanups, and how to actually build proper foundations before layering on tools. And since then, a lot has changed. So Aaron went from podcast guest to great mate to now colleague. So we now work together at Rubica. So what brought us together was not a recruitment plan or a job ad. It was actually just a shared obsession with one idea. And that idea is that clients should only have to tell their story once. And once you really take that seriously, it forced a much bigger conversation about systems, data, and just the overall experience. So how do you actually design a tech stack around that principle? How do you stop rekeying, re-asking, re-uploading, and re-contextualizing the same freaking information across different tools? And so this episode does get a little technical at times. So we talk about schemas and endpoints, which are really just structured ways of defining data and, you know, the connection points between systems. Talk about MCP or Model Context Protocol, which is essentially a standard way for AI agents to connect into other systems securely and smartly. And we both reference Rocado, rather, which I bang on about all the time, which I would describe as enterprise grade, you know, scalable version of Zapier. It's glue, and it's the wiring layer that lets everything talk to each other properly. And it's where everything becomes possible, especially when it comes to integration and tools like, as we just, you know, talked about the acronyms before, so MCP and APIs. But yeah, underneath all that terminology, the real questions that we're exploring are: how do you build a CRM and operations platform that mostly works out of the box, is not completely dependent on one ecosystem or, you know, enterprise CRM, is API and MCP first and ready for AI agents, still gives firms flexibility to customize and build their own IP and bring their own IP without spending a fortune up front and just hoping that it'll work. So the ridiculous CapEx requirement that is often the case with, you know, going down the Salesforce or the like Dynamics Hubs or whatever enterprise CRM it is path, even your big chunky CRMs or big chunky financial planning CRMs. So how do you do that? So that's the overarching challenge or challenges we're trying to solve. And yeah, there's definitely a bit of, or very much so, talking our own book in this one, which is inevitable when you're building something that is in the space that you're discussing. But the intent here is not a sales pitch. Probably comes off as one. It's an honest conversation about what we're seeing, what we're building, what's working, and yeah, what's still hard. So if you're thinking about interoperability, AI inside workflows rather than sitting beside them, or how to just design something that'll make sense in a few years' time, or still make sense rather, we think you'll find this useful. And my first mistake was asking Aaron what the newest piece of tech he owns is, as we got sidetracked immediately.
Newest piece of tech? Oh, mate, look, I absolutely love my new MacBook Pro. Like, that is, I think, moving from Microsoft over to that has sort of changed the way that I work. But the newest thing that I'm leaning into is something that you've actually shown me recently, and that's probably more a pattern. You know, it's the MCPs, it's the agent aware, it's that API first architecture. It's like over the last few years, I think both you and I have been experimenting a lot with, you know, like AI, like FileNose, Copilot. But what's shifted for me is probably realizing that the real power isn't in the model itself. Like it's about the structure that's underneath it. And, you know, what we're building is we're trying to build systems now that assuming that agents like Claude and Copilot will interact with it. I think that's pretty cool. You know, like it's sort of changing the experience from, you know, like workflows and automation to like actually interacting with our own APIs. So the logic and the interface, like we separate that out. We separate the workflows and the UI. And yeah, we're just making everything modular. So yeah, it's pretty cool. It's really exciting once you sort of dive into it, isn't it?
It's incredibly exciting. I think when it comes down to it, we are planning for, I still can't believe that we get to work together, mate, so we'll get into that shortly. But planning for a life without having this reliance on like a front-end CRM and basically everyone needing to be licensed and jumping in and viewing the same dashboards and workflows, at, you know, just the interoperability that this is creating is just so exciting. And it, I don't know, all roads lead back to Wakato, which I bang on about all the time. And I don't know, I'm getting sidetracked already, but have you had any, how's that transition been so far? I know last time when we caught up, episode 110, all the way back in November 2024, you were in, I think it was week one of your rollout or going live with Fin365, so using the Power Platform and Microsoft really heavily.
Yep.
Have you got any sort of observations about sort of 6 weeks into your time at Rubica on that sort of change? What has stayed the same and what's different?
Yeah, look, I think a lot has sort of changed from back then. You know, like we work from when we spoke last, we were looking at moving, or I think we just made the change to Fin365 at that point. So we were very early days. And I think for us, it was all about building the fundamentals, like getting all the data right. So we cleaned the house before we moved it. We wanted to make sure that everything was sort of set in stone for us to build the automation, the workflows. And Infinity had these amazing aspirations, and they still do, about growth and acquisitions and tucking everything in. And we couldn't do that without those fundamentals built. So I think from going from having this mentality around building a structure, we never really had much focus on building the cool tools and the automation and all that kind of stuff. And it wasn't probably until the last 12 months, which we started to do that more. So I think when we got into using Power Automate, learning about, you know, the Graph API, how we can sort of bring those tools in together, that's when sort of, I don't know, like unlock this superpower around what we could actually do within the firm. So we've started to really bring everything together a lot more. That was around like the Tell Your Story Once vision, which, you know, you and I share. It's bringing in, you know, from the moment the client walks in the door, they're not having to repeat themselves over and over and over again. We had you know, like accounting, financial planning, and lending, and we wanted to tie it all together. So that way we could build out all that context so we could have, you know, amazing experiences, whether that's like, you know, delivering these cool interactive presentations or, you know, just being having a customized personal conversation with the client in the meeting, like being more prepared, all that stuff and bringing the context together makes so much more of a difference. So like to answer your question, like Power Automate was awesome and did the tool, like it did the job back then. But I think now when we're starting to move into that like multi-org space, so like Rubica, we're delivering these amazing experiences that you and I have both built over the last like however many years, we're bringing it all together and trying to roll it out to multiple firms all at once. And I don't think we could do it without Wakato, to be honest. Like I know you bang on about it all the time. I was like, oh yeah, Pat, whatever. It's cool. It's just like Power Automate. But the ability for us to like, you know, manage our own API endpoints or build out our workflows and then just like basically at a flick of a button, you know, roll that out and have full control over our recipes going into different organizations and just, you know, make these small configurable changes. It's been pretty eye-opening to me. So it's cool. I don't think we can do it without it.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think, yeah, definitely bang on it for a reason. But I think, yeah, just that scalability of being able to zoom out or use that same infrastructure or architecture or running gear, as a lot of people
tend to call it now, is just, yeah, I just really sort of took that for granted before, but it's really starting to show and see that it does tick that box. But also for, even for businesses where they might have, you know, more than one site or more than one office in that same group. So being able to not only scale, you know, think about site after site, but site being, you know, a firm using Rubik, for example, but those sort of sites internally as well, where there's little customizations there, already banging on about Wakato again and just getting distracted. So
joined an industry webinar that sharpened your skills? Make it count. Log in to cpdcheck.com and have it assessed for CPD.
I think it's probably worth reflecting on, as I mentioned before, like I still can't really believe that we now get the opportunity to work together, but just reflecting on how we introduced and came together. It was actually through this podcast.
Mm.
Do you mind sort of taking us through that sort of last 12 months and then how we sort of landed together and maybe a little overview of what we've done, I guess, in that last, I'll say sort of last 6 or 7 weeks based on when the listener is actually listening to this one?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I can't remember how long ago. It was almost, 2 years ago or something that we spoke, and we always talked about having another one, like a follow-up, and this is it. So it's only taken us a year and a half. But I thought from that, like, we clearly had this pretty close, I guess, or shared interest around tech, you know, whether that was our background was the same. So we came from advice, moved into technology as, you know, being just super curious and had an interest in it. You know, you gave me the super cool nickname of Batman, and then we sort of bonded over that because my Batman hours are almost like your normal hours. And our relationship really grew. So like from that, we didn't speak daily, but it was often enough. And we're talking about what we're building, the problems that we're solving, the crazy, weird tech ideas that some of us had. Like, I don't know, like I think the coolest part was being able to share this passion that I had with somebody else. And, you know, we just became really, really good mates over that time. And I think we always had that sort of, I know, like that feeling that one day we would do something together, where it's like build a cool thing or do something, whatever. I don't know what it was, but I think we always had that between us. And when the opportunity came up to join Rubika, like it was just such a natural step for me. Like I was wanting to move into doing tech full time. And, you know, you guys were looking at, you know, bringing somebody in who had the same values and the same passion as you did. And yeah, it was just perfect. But I think the thing for me though, like that really drew me to it, was that I would always hear from, like, you know, whether that's other businesses or leaders and things like that, like people are always wanting to do the cool stuff that we would always do and we would always talk about, but they would always say like, oh, I don't have an Aaron or I don't have a Pat. Like, I don't know how many times over the last 2 years I had heard that exact same saying. And it's a massive barrier, because without that, like, what I was doing in Infinity, like I wasn't buying software. It was about building the architecture. It was about experimenting and thinking about the client experience and how that sort of brings everything together. And then it was like, if I didn't have that sort of interest and that passion to do it outside of my normal day job, like looking at APIs at 10 o'clock and breaking things and rebuilding them, then I don't think that we would be where we are today. So most firms, though, they shouldn't have to sort of hire somebody in that space. Like, it shouldn't be like a thing that every firm needs to do. You should have the ability to just go outside and tap into a CRM or a system where, you know, we've done all that. We've done all the hard work. We've done all the thinking. You don't need an Aaron. You don't need a Pat. And, you know, you really, like, the capital expense that you would have to go through to get to a place like that is insane. And the time period as well, like it took us 2 or 3 years to get to that point. So I think the ability now to work with you and to work with an amazing team that are all aligned in the same place, but that gives me the ability to help other firms, you know, do that exact same thing is really cool.
It is. No, some great reflections there. I must say, you are the Stephen to my Handley, if anyone actually gets that reference I've just made up just then. But just on that, just while I've, you know, magically brought Stephen into the fold, I often take the advice of our guests, particularly on this podcast, or those that we interviewed. And Kieran, if you wouldn't mind just sharing a soundbite of what he said in particular about singling out Aaron in particular, if we just play that now.
Not that I'm trying to poach, so let me just make it very clear, but someone like Aaron, right, who has lived in, is tech curious, has got, you know, deep enough technical domain knowledge, but also understands financial planning practices, they're the sorts of people that grow into this role.
Stephen, I'll just say, we beat you to it. We took your advice and I couldn't be more, I don't know, I feel very greedy. Like you just talked about, you know, an Aaron or a Pat. It feels very greedy that we've got both of us for the same business, but I just could not be more excited to be working with you on a daily basis. And I can definitely say that the Batmaning or the working after hours is still well and truly alive, which I think shows your passion, but also need to tone it down a bit, mate, because I think there's a bit of overtime going on there.
Absolutely. Well, I was going to say, like, you know, you talk about toning it down. It's so hard when the stuff we're doing is like actually exciting and cool.
Yeah, I know.
Like, yeah. Man, I think, I mean, not to say that I was getting like bored or anything like that, you know, at the end of my time with Infinity, like we were still doing some amazing stuff. But I think moving into this full time and working with you, it sort of just like reignited so much of that creativity that I had. So, you know, we were talking about forms, like we were talking about onboarding. Do you remember how that conversation came up that we just sparked the whole forms conversation?
Remind us, sorry, but
we were talking about tell your story once, and you know, tell your story once like it means so many different things to so many different people, but it needs to start at the friggin' like start of the process. Like we were always saying, well, how do we onboard clients? And like you were like, well, I don't know, we have a type form. And like, okay, well, what does type form look like? Look, honestly, it looks like crap. Where's the data stored? Like, oh, it's stored offshore, it's stored somewhere else. Like, I don't actually know. Like, all these little things. And then, okay, well, how's the API? Like, how does that actually feed back in? Is it flexible enough for us to be able to do the cool stuff we want to do? No, it's not. Like, why don't we just build our own freaking tool? So that's how it started. And I think from that, like, being able to go, right, we have full control to design it and make it look however we wanted. But then the cool thing about that was like we were just bouncing back ideas of, right, what about the brand configuration? So it looks like your own brand. So like when you send a link to a client, it's going to look and feel like your business is sending it to them. And when you're charging the kind of money that firms are charging these days, you want to deliver, there needs to be a particular level of the client experience that you're giving. And I think if you're giving this like crappy little type form looking thing or a Microsoft Forms, you know, there's no pre-fill, there's no two-factor authentication, there's no branding or coding or anything like that. To be honest, like, I mean, clients pick up on that stuff, but when it's polished and it looks really, really clean, I think like they may not notice it. They may not say, oh man, that was a really cool form. But I think there is a point in saying that they pick up on the things that look like crap. So we're trying to put all these like small little things, and we spend a bit of time on designing that thing to look and feel like your form, but give us the flexibility with the API endpoints to be able to do the other cool stuff, like build out the, you know, the flow charts, the entity maps, like all the visual aspects to it as well. Pre-filling all the data into the CRM, creating the household, moving on workflows, like the little things that really matter to that tell your story once goal. So it's hard to like not get excited about it and not work late at night when you're doing awesome stuff like that.
It's a good point. I think to go back to the origin story of forms, just in terms of how Rubica was born was so Collins SBA, I still call it Weeks, so I'm still employed there. But Collins SBA, we basically bought Salesforce in 2019 or so. We're the first client of a business called Wealth Connect or Creative Mass. A lot of won't draw that story, but a lot of people know how they ended up. I'm pretty sure there's still a private detective looking for the original founder. Maybe that's wrapped up, maybe that hasn't. But anyway, we got curious and built a lot of solved a lot of the problems that they weren't solving. Turned out there were a lot of the problems that other businesses had. Lots of show and tell demos of cool, what have you built? And the question was always, as you mentioned, do we need a pad? Do we need a full-time tech person? The answer was, yeah, probably. And the second question was, how do we get that? And it was like, I don't know, like, you know, do we have to merge? Like, do we have to come together to actually get a piece of this? So we've got this parallel silos of all doing the same thing, all solving the same problems, but no solution for it. The solution has been, still to this day, go and buy that enterprise tool directly and then go and pay 10, 20, 30, 50, like bottomless pit of money hole of capital expenditure on something that, you know, fingers crossed is going to work today, and fingers crossed that it's a long-term solution that's not tech debt, that's not going to be eroded by, you know, the sassica that we're experiencing in terms of, you know, AI coming and eating up everything and people thinking, okay, now we're going to build something ourselves and just go from there. So that was then, you know, it solved all those problems. One of the overarching point of this is one of the problems that I had never solved was, or solved well, was, as you alluded to, around, you mentioned sort of Typeform. We still used what's called Jotform, which I'm sure many people are familiar with. That was, I think, what the only thing that gave me some sort of comfort was when COVID happened. I think the Tasmanian state government rolled out Jotform Enterprise. It's like the, you know, you had to, like, when it was early days COVID, you had to basically say when you had it, like you logged your positive test. I was like, ah, the government's using Jotform, it must be good enough. But it still just did not look good. Like, just did not look like an experience that was like, you know, wow, welcome. And also the fact that we talked about the pre-fill and the elements of tell your story once. So we're just always, yeah, sucked at onboarding from the point of view of scalability. So zooming out to make sure we could cater for multiple sites, multiple divisions, as well as multiple firms, you know, across Australia. So Rubica is 10 firms, 11, not 100 to tolerate it. And there was just nothing out there that ticked all those boxes. I think another element that you mentioned is storage. As you said, like where is that data going? How long is it being stored for? Where does it live? And in particular, if you've got your team just with the ability to create whatever form they want, what are the controls or what's the oversight on sensitive inputs that you put in there? Whether it's what's your tax file number or just other, you know, class, you know, director IDs, other sort of classic sensitive data that is just now, it's essentially a copy of a copy. Normally you get an email that adds that in it too. You can't really mark fields as sensitive unless you, I think you go for those enterprise versions. And that leads to the other point of like when you go down this enterprise path, whether it's Microsoft Dynamics, so FIN 365, Salesforce, HubSpot, Pipedrive, whatever, it's always the plus, 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 plus. I need this freaking form tool. I need a document generation tool. I need an AI file. I need a tool. I need an SOA tool now. I need Big Chunky because it doesn't do everything and I don't want to open up it. Got walled garden returning. So it's just about how do we offer this consolidated tool and also keep the flexibility of having that form be generated. So, you know, for using financial planning onboarding as one example, how do we enable our users and our sort of network to use that at whatever stage of the process they want? It doesn't have to be kicked off from a Salesforce lead or a Salesforce account. It could be from a FIN365. I'm not sure what you actually call the tables, right? Is it leads or deals? Maybe jump in and tell us. But it's the same thing. So there's that, but it's just, and we had him talk about the MCP or being able to use these tools, you know, calling them from whether it's a Microsoft, you know, Copilot agent or using Claude or ChatGPT or any of those tools. So he was just trying to tick all those boxes. And you built that on, we talked about this on in the public in terms of LinkedIn. It was day 2.5 of just, you know, hey, Pat, what do you think of this? And it absolutely blew me away. And then it was like, hey, here's this concept of form, of problem solved. How do we wire this up so we've got the scalability? So once again, using Workato, using the APIs, we've got full control over and ticking off the no storage argument or just making sure that the form goes to where it needs to go. So the form data. So traditionally or naturally that goes into the CRM. So that was the first problem that you had solved as part of something that's, I know, you know, we're all in terms of if you're involved with operations or tech in a business, you probably got all these problems that you haven't solved over the whatever tenure you've been in that business, whether it's 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. And then one day someone comes along or somebody comes along and you just go, that problem that's been ticking away forever has now been solved. And you did that in day 2.5. And we were vibing. You'll probably do a bit of vibe coding as well, I think, on side. But then it was just insane how quickly you're able to do it. And then that sparked the next part, which was, okay, let's get this suite of forms out to our firms. So NPS, FP onboarding, accounting onboarding, the secure transmission of information, so the TFN and the bank account details. And then can you remind us, how did this next project come about around diagrams and sort of entity maps?
Oh, man. Right. Well, I think I can't remember where I saw it, but I think it was like a LinkedIn post or something, but somebody posted up this really old, I think it was like a lucid chart diagram or something. I can't remember what it was, but I just remember looking at it thinking like, they're probably, so is it accounting, business client, business advisory client, they're probably charging like a ridiculous amount, which is fair with the amount of entities that were on that map. But I was really thinking, like, you're going to present that to a client. It just looked ugly. And I think in this time, like this, especially in this day and age where we have so much technology and so many cool things, like that give us the ability to create an amazing experience. I thought, like, why can't you just, I don't know, like make it look prettier or just spend that little extra time, like, I don't know, go Canva or I don't know what it was. But out of that, I just was frustrated with the way that the typical flowchart diagram sort of software has been, you know, designed for. And just started getting on, you know, it's just that vibe coding train to get a proof of concept out. And I think that's probably the coolest thing that we all have. Like, it's not just me or you. It's like anyone has the ability to go into a tool now and just try and spin up some sort of concept and idea to see what it looks like and see what it works. But then I think it was that next step where it's like you come in and like, right, well, let's talk about how can we use Wakado? How can we build our own API endpoints, which is absolutely incredible, by the way, like how you can just spin up a recipe and then build an endpoint for anything. But how can we use all that kind of stuff to really bring it all together? We've got this amazing looking front end. We want to pull the data from the back end. We want to give it this incredible logic. So whether that's like using AI to spin out, the nodes and edges and the actual, you know, the way that their data needs to be translated and spun brought all together. You know, that's bringing all the pieces to build out this incredible form, or like translating the data using AI to spin out the JSON or whatever it may be to then display this incredible looking form. So, yeah, it was like more out of frustration, I think, of seeing all these crappy tools out there. But it looks awesome. I can't wait to show, you know, the world what it actually looks like and what we can do with it.
You're really dunking on those other tools out there, so we have to give them a bit of credit. But I think it comes back to the plus. Like, you don't have to pay for all this stuff, or if you are, it should do what it says that it does. So just a couple of points there. So you're definitely putting the tech in the Advice Tech podcast with, I think, some of the terminology that we're using. So I think to zoom out a tiny bit, or to step back a tiny bit, I feel like in these couple of projects, I guess I've done the wiring, like the, you know, the Wakado wiring of like, you know, connect Salesforce to this thing that you've built, or these things rather, and then how does the data flow into it and then out of it? So a couple of examples would be on those entity or diagram maps are like, once again, inside Salesforce, and I'm sure it's the same inside Fin35, I think actually showed me, and I threw up a little bit in my mouth when I saw it, but the way that you want to see, you just want to see a household or a family group, and you want to see how those relationships actually come together. Who's the director of that company? Who are the members of that SMSF? Who's the shareholder of this company? Who are the beneficiaries of this family trust? It's not difficult in theory, but in terms of you actually turning that, making that complex, I think, you know, the wiring or us working together, you really made that simple on the front end, or what the client or what the user sees. And the way that we've been working together, at least so far, is how do we get that data in a really easy, seamless way from that source of truth or the system of record, for example, Salesforce? How do we get that into this entity map without you having to do anything? And then you took it to the next freaking level, and you build an AI agent inside this tool. And once again, a shout out to Kieran, because we're definitely going to include a couple of links. So one to the financial planning onboarding form, and the other to a diagram example for people to have a play. Or tip would be probably don't open it on mobile. I think do it on desktop. But in terms of still early days. But the whole point is that, yeah, we want to embed that within the CRM and just have that in a way that is illustrated as reality shows. Not having to muck around with different shapes and colors and this is a bit different, and go into, for example, Lucidchart or another tool and copy my last one that was similar and then do it up again. Like, it should just work. And once again, the interoperability opportunity of being able to do this from any tool. So not limited to Salesforce, not limited to any CRM, just have data. But I got sidetracked on the agent part. Do you mind taking us through how you approach that and what that means? Because that is just such a new development and really excites me as well.
I think it's awesome because, like, as you know, most people these days, like I'd be very surprised if there's anyone out there in the world who's never like spoken to a ChatGPT or anything like that. Like, in this day and age, it's just part of our life. And I think that, like, natural language talking to a model is so ingrained in a lot of us now that it was just such a natural addition to all of our tools. And I think it's going to be a big part of the way that a lot of people work moving forward, is like this natural language way that we speak with, you know, whether that's our software or our models or whatever it is, our agents, if you want to call it that. I think that's going to be like, how can we translate that into applying the business logic to our process and our systems and our experiences that we want to create. So for ours, it's like, cool, like not saying that it's like going to recommend your strategies or anything, but you can talk to it like it's a power planner or it's a like an associate or something like that. And how can we brainstorm ideas just in this little thing, but then visually represent it in front of you? So you're not just talking to it and give you text. It's talking to you. Do you want me to show you? Yeah, cool. And then it just visually builds it right in front of you so you can see it. And you can compare. So you can go like compare the existing versus the proposed strategy and talk to it. Oh, maybe let's make these changes. Or why did you say that? Or like, you know, all those natural things that we usually do with our ChatGPT environment, we've brought into our tools as well.
I'm with you. I think the really underrated part of that is just the ability to, okay, yes, it's put that on the canvas, on the diagram, and you can go from there and drag and drop it or make any further change without having to go be limited to text. I think it's really powerful. Can I just ask you on, like a big focus on Ensemble recently or what's been promoted recently is, you know, this year is all about the how and taking action. And we sort of talked briefly about, you know, vibe coding or using that as a way to road test or just get concepts up and going really quickly. How, like, what's your, in a non-technical way, like, what's your approach to like, okay, I've got this idea. Like, what are you opening up and what are you doing to get something like visual so you can work out where the ideas are, you know, a dud or, yeah, or a winner?
Yeah, it's a really good idea. I think first, like, I try to reverse engineer before I go to like a vibe coding sort of like environment. Is like, I'll start with what is the ideal outcome and then reverse engineer from there. So, like, I don't think you can go into these tools just straight, just from my experience anyway. I'm sure maybe people have different experiences, but if I've gone in and I just start winging it, then you're going to get something that probably doesn't make sense. Or later on down the track, when you're trying to work with your APIs and webhooks and stuff, it's probably going to be problematic. So I try to think backwards. So what are the tools that we're using? What is the outcome that we're trying to achieve? So if it's like the entity maps, it's like reverse engineer it. So we need the data coming from Salesforce. How are we getting it in there? We're using our form process. What data are we getting in to get out and so on? But then also, like, what is the schema going to look like? Because I think that makes a big difference too around how does the information filter through and how do we translate that into these visual things? So having that concept in the back of my mind or even written down in some sort of way at the start really helps me go in the right direction. But then I'll probably say, cool, well, this is the way that we want it to do it. This is the tools that we're going to be using. And I'll just come up with a bit of a game plan. Visually, I want to show entities. So we're in Australian accounting. We deal with companies, trusts, you know, individuals, like whatever it may be. Give it the business logic that we know. Like, that's where our experience comes into it. So you're not just vibe coding and relying on it to tell you what the business logic is. You are telling it what the business logic needs to be and how you want to apply that to the client experience. And that's the next part. It's like, what client experience do you want to create or what user experience? So I want the user to interact with a chatbot, or I want the user to, you know, like be able to click these buttons and do these things or do present mode and show full screen, like all these little things that you want to have in your mind before you actually start. And then you can go down the path of actually, you know, vibe coding, chatting to it and building out some sort of proof of concept. That's usually my process.
I love it. I think what you're really good at and what is just strikingly obvious is you will get like a minimum viable product. Like, you will build something, whether it's you know, pretty rough and tumble as a first cut, but you will go straight to as many people as you can where you value or don't value their opinion and say, hey, what do you think of this? And you will somehow soak up all of that really quality feedback. And I don't know, I'm sure your brain works in mysterious ways, but it's just like, bang, bang, yeah, yeah. And then version two is always like a million times better than the first thing that you've shown.
That's like anything. You're right. Like, I think there's so many of those products out there. Like, I guarantee you, most of the people listening have probably tried to build their own apps and all this kind of stuff. They may have done really well or not, but I guarantee you that, like, they probably would have spent, or most people out there would have spent so much time trying to get to like version one. And then it's like, cool, you spent so much effort and maybe money getting to version one that you almost don't want to go down the pathway of trying to improve to get to version two because you know what has sort of taken place. Where I'm like, man, just get to version one, get something, because then you're not wasting time. Like, if you can build really, really quickly and just prove whether it's great or whether it sucks, and then, well, if it does suck, why does it suck? Is there a way that we can change it from not sucking to something that's really, really good? And if it's awesome, like, man, just go harder, like double down and just make it really, really quickly, like the actual enterprise sort of system that you need it to be. Because like we're trying to, you know, get ISO compliant and all these different types of things, like Vibe Card wouldn't just cut it. So what do we do? And what, how do we bring all the actual, you know, Wakato and Salesforce and, you know, all those tools together to make it that? But if you don't get there fast enough, like you don't use speed to your advantage, then I don't know, like you just got to be left behind, I think, in this environment.
Yeah, you can quickly lose momentum. But I also think it's the sum of the tools that you build as well. So we're building, I don't know if you want to call them sort of microservices, but a lot of tools where they all work together and that becomes more valuable than them individually. I just wanted to ask you, like I'm reflecting on, it was episode 110, so November 2024. So if you can cast your mind back, I'm not sure if you listened back to it. I did before we recorded this one. But a big part of what you said, and I'm just reflecting on once again the, you know, we just talked about the feedback angle of getting quick feedback and making those changes, is you, I believe when you were rolling out or before you rolled out Fin 365 or that, you know, CRM number 3, I think it was for the business, you actually surveyed the team in a really structured way or you got that feedback in a really structured way. Have you got any tips for, like, if someone's trying to do this in their business, maybe you're not an operations manager or a practice manager, but you've got a keen eye or interest in whether it's Vibe Coding or Power Automate or Zapier or heck, Wakato, all of those sort of drag and drop tools. Have you got any tips on like what processes to start on that are probably low risk but high reward that someone could get that feedback loop going and how to get that feedback? Is it literally, I know it's hard, we've got a pretty hybrid workforce now,
yep.
But are you like, I know that you're working, you know, full-time remotely now, as I mean, we've actually never met in person, which is insane. I think we're going to meet for the first time in person next week. But yeah, a really mumble jumble of a question there. But any tips on where to start? I'm just once again thinking about how do we actually take action and do this?
Yeah. Oh, man. It's a really good question. I think, to be honest, everyone will be different. There's so many different places. Like if you want to, it depends on your goal, I think. Like if your goal is to actually make an impact on the business, then do what we did. I think like get the survey or get the group, the workshop together, talk about your problems. Get everyone to have their input and to have their say, because I think that is so much more valuable. If like, you know, it's just like me going out and getting feedback from everybody. It's like, tell me your real problems so that if I'm automating or if I'm building a different workflow or process or design, then it's actually going to affect the people using it. That's what matters. It's not what I think. But if you're actually just looking for like those low hanging fruits of what I think would be easy, honestly, I think like that whole booking system process is a great place to start because everyone has the same problem where they're trying to book in clients for reviews. They're trying to, you know, make sure people are actually turning up. They're sending out reminders or calendar invites. And to be honest, there's a lot of firms that are still doing it the old school way where they're just going off a list, like a spreadsheet, calling them all manually, booking them in the calendars, and then doing the same thing, like doing their reminder calls the next or the day before and things like that. And I know for us, that was where it all started for me, was the initial review calls. People just weren't playing up. And that was because some people, like we would either forget to send a calendar invite or we wouldn't do the reminder calls. So we took that out and we're like, cool, what tools out there to solve this? And that was where we landed on Microsoft Bookings at the time. And you know, while they've made some improvements over the years, like I think it's just really showed us that what you can do with a little bit of technology and a little bit of automation to customize it, you can take it so much further with all that context that you have, all that business logic that you have around how you want to shape things.
Yeah, the age-old argument of Calendly versus Microsoft Bookings. I think it's and we haven't even talked about you crossing over to the dark side yet, or at least directly, but there was a quick point I've just remembered from, I think it was episode 155, so AI-powered client acquisition with Alan Watmore, who even talked about like how now using AI agents to book those appointments. So previously we've gone from, okay, send email of like, here's my availability, like manually to phone call or combination to bookings to Calendly. But what he really sort of opened my eyes to was like, okay, you can just use an agent to actually be that least point or lower point of friction versus the what can feel like now. I think we really jumped on those tools, so your bookings and your Calendlies, and welcome them with open arms. But sometimes there's a risk of like, you know, not asking when the client's free. It's like, here's my calendar. Here's when I'm available. pick a tire, pal, and there's no in between. So it's a challenge I'm sort of thinking about at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you're so right. Like, we send them our information and say, cool, book it. And then we get angry because they haven't booked in a meeting. You're like, well, you're right. Like, what about them? And we need to listen to them. What they pay us, you know, to service them. So you're right. And then I think there's so much to be said as well about now that shift in, like, people almost not wanting to pick up the phone and actually have a conversation with their clients. It's like, still do it. It makes so much of an impact. We're giving you all the tools, right? Like, we're giving you all this ability to try and automate and create less friction in that sort of stuff. So you can pick up the phone. You've got more time to be able to do those kind of things that actually create value for your client. So yeah, like, still do it. I think there is a bit of a shift in that, and we need to put in a bit more of an effort in that sort of space too.
I agree. Speaking, just, yeah, laboring on the point of shifts or shifting. So we just talked about bookings versus Calendly. I mentioned the dark side there. any thoughts on, like, you actually created this
rivalry.
Sort of the rivalry of Microsoft versus Salesforce. Have you got anything that you've experienced in that past sort of 6 or 7 weeks or so where you've gone, it really is like the best tool wins? not platform versus platform.
But, yeah. No, look, it is a good rivalry. I think that whole, like, you know, Mark Benioff is in the corner of my ear. I'm like, what are you doing? But yeah, look, I think to be clear, like, there is nothing wrong with, like, a Microsoft or a Salesforce. Like, they are both incredible, you know, ecosystems and they're incredible CRMs. When I crossed over, I think I quickly realized, as you would always say this to me, I never believed it, but I quickly realized that under the hood, like, we are all working with the same building blocks. Like, we are working with the same APIs, the same authentication, the same payloads, webhooks. Like, Microsoft Graph is an insane tool and we use it a lot. Like, we actually integrate with Microsoft probably more than a lot of the other tools we have, and at a really deep level too. So I think it's not about, like, Microsoft or Salesforce. It's probably more around the data and the orchestration, you know. So I stopped sort of going, like, who's better? More to, well, how clean is the architecture and how easy is it for us to work with them? And like you say, we stand on the shoulders of some pretty amazing, you know, giants like Salesforce and Workato. And to bring Workato in there as that orchestration layer, I think that's where it becomes really cool. So it's like the combination of all the things that we do and the tools that we have at our sort of fingertips to build a better architecture than what I would consider, you know, others have.
Very diplomatic response. I'm with you. I think it's just so much fun being able to integrate with the tools that everyone's using on a daily basis. And just to, no, I don't know whether it's ramming home the point, but the ability to bring through, like, the Teams transcript into the CRM, this is my poor segue trying to go to file notes, so I've drilled it. But being able to bring in the Teams, like, just, you don't even need a recording tool, just use the tool you already have. So Teams transcript straight into the CRM, as well as things like, you know, a really deep or enhanced SharePoint integration where we can create sharing links to folders, once again, without leaving the CRM, and sending them via email, once again, via your Microsoft email account. So just trying to use the tools available to us in an efficient and effective way. Have you did a recent post on LinkedIn, which I got around as well, around file notes. Have you got any thoughts or feelings about where they live or just them in general in terms of tools versus features?
Yeah. Yeah, look, it's, I don't know if it's a controversial one or not, but I think that they absolutely need to live in a CRM. Like, that's, in my opinion, to create, you know, if we think about the client experience, we also think about compliance, we think about all those different things that actually matter in our industry. Context matters. You know, like, we could go down this path. Like, we can get excited about all the tools out there. Like, there's AI that does the file notes, like, does SOAs, it does all this cool stuff. There's automations, there's workflows and dashboards that look amazing. Like, there's all this really cool stuff out there, like all these shiny tools. And I think especially with AI, I realized something that, you know, most people hopefully have experienced this exact same thing. Like, it really matters, like, what context you give it. That creates the either good or the bad outcomes in its response. So yeah, it's more like, for us, tell your story once, it loops in that same sort of fact, right? Like, it's not about forms. It's about building a context layer for us to then say, right, well, onboarding needs context. the file notes need context, the presentations that we build need context, and then hopefully soon the SOAs that we also build will need the context, and it brings it all together. So living in the CRM is probably the most important part, so you're not getting like these hallucinations or workflows that misfire, or, you know, like experiences for your staff or for the clients that just sort of fragment as well.
Very well put. I think the, yeah, it is, it's a massive part of Telstra ones. Yeah, it is such a incredibly important point around how, I guess, artifacts or how things are generated. And I don't know, I get very dubious when you've got, fair play to all these tools I'm very jealous of in terms of their, I'm sure the revenue numbers they're pulling in and the users. But in terms of being able to keep that up when it comes to being that tool that needs the context and having to upload your freaking knowledge base and upload all the artifacts, all the tools, all your phone notes, all your emails, it feels like it should start and stop with the CRM. And I think it should be AI or sort of file notes first. The file note is the canvas for pushing CRM updates or new records or deleting stuff. Or like that is where the unstructured mess, which is a file note, like a literal document, becomes the CRM or is the CRM. So yeah, just get a bit concerned when we've got sort of providers trying to sting you extra for that, plus standalone tools that I know are becoming more advice generators. So if you're willing to integrate, please reach out. But I'm with you. It's challenging.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think the coolest thing that I remember, like it was the first week or something that we, when I joined Rubica, like you showed me how you sort of transformed, like you've got your file node that lives within the system. It comes through. But then it's also like going, cool, these are the action items that you need to have done. Like whether that's update your assets and liabilities or, you know, creating tasks in the workflow and all that kind of stuff. And it almost like created a checklist in it. And then you just go, bang, like start that or update that or whatever it may be. And then it's so instant how it just uses your API endpoints that you've built in Workato to then just fire off and actually do the thing, rather than just go, oh, cool, we're going to do it later, or I'm going to send that fact find to the offshore team and they'll hopefully get to it when they've got some time. Like, no, it's so instant, and then you're getting that immediate feedback of, is this right or is it wrong?
Yeah. I think that's the part where people like think it's genuinely magic, but it's just a well-crafted, well-architected prompt in the background that like has given all that source data. And maybe that's where I've seen a few posts on LinkedIn where people are really questioning like Copilot out of the box. And maybe this is because of it's a marketing problem of like, hey, here's this thing that should know where you are. And I'm sure it's getting better every day. But a lot of the time, a lot of the arguments I see is, oh, you got to give it, you got to configure it, or you got to tell it the context. So I think, just trying to link that point to it. I'm not sure you had any experience there with Copilot, or at least in your history at Infinity.
Yeah, not too much, to be honest. But I think when I was at Infinity, sort of looping around context, like we customized the absolute crap out of Dynamics. Like we had this, we did do all the fundamental stuff and cleaning the house before we moved. But we then went down this customization path, and not because we love customization just for the sake of it. Like I'm sure there's heaps of better things I'd rather be doing, but it was more so we could bring the entire firm together, so we could, you know, use it as one operating system as a business to get that compliance. Oh, sorry, that context layer or that shared context. So if like accounting and financial planning and lending are all sending data into the same system, and we have that context to be able to go, cool, we're getting the emails, we're getting the phone calls, we're getting, you know, like, oh, they're an accounting client, this is where they're at with their workflows, all that kind of stuff, then actually makes so much of a difference later on down the track. So yeah, like I'm sure all of that bringing it together will hopefully improve whether that you turn on some sort of MCP or you're working with Copilot or whatever. Like, absolutely will impact the result.
Totally. Yeah, that's right. It's CRM and operations, which also includes, you know, FSL and APES compliance. So yeah, Telstra ones. I think you are, in my opinion, still the unofficial poster boy for P365. I think you've been uninvited to P365 Symphony because I don't think you can get through the form. Maybe that's just a tech issue, but they need it sorted out regardless. But I think Yasmin Weston, you've well truly gone from equal first place to the poster person for Industry 5. So killing it. Aaron, we have spent a lot of time. This doesn't feel right in terms of, I just feel a bit irky about it in terms of, you know, being the host, going on about Rubica, et cetera. Like it feels very vertical integration, very
sort of Rupert Murdoch about it, very Clayton Daniel in terms of CPD check. But is there anything you want to leave us with in terms of what you're excited for this year, what we may be working on, any sort of final thoughts or feelings?
I was just thinking, like, I didn't even know where to start. And this was probably like the trickiest thing for me to think about because there's so many cool things and it's very easy to get carried away with, you know, the excitement of we could do this and we could do that. And like, there's so much more that we need to sort of bring in and actually do the right way. We're not just building in this super scrappy environment anymore. We're trying to be a legit, you know, sort of business. But I think the biggest thing for me is probably like the execution of the speed. So like we listen, we prototype, we ship, we refine. Like that's our process. And I think our clients that we already have on board already have seen that, like in just the experiences or even our prospects that we've had meetings with. We listen to their problems, then we do a follow-up and show them something that has maybe been prototyped to actually solve that problem or be customized to their business. I think that's really, really exciting. You know, you mentioned it before, we want 10 firms to love us, not 100 firms to tolerate us. And I think a lot of our roadmap over the next 12 months is probably going to be, you know, directed from those 10 firms. So they come on board, they love the experience. We know that the product will be right and it'll be ready for us to then scale up. But some of the things I know in my mind, I don't know if you're aligned in the same sort of way, but like I think AI-powered SLAs, absolutely. We've got the context, we've got the workflow, we've got the designs. That's absolutely there. Some people have seen the interactive strategy presentations I've built as well. Like that all sort of ties in with the architecture that we've already started with forms and with the entity maps. Like it's using the same stuff. So it's just that natural progression. You mentioned the Teams integrations. Like I think that's freaking awesome. Like to be able to get that deep and that ingrained and be able to have like other users go in and get file notes on behalf of people where traditionally.
Yeah, free up the advisor, the bottleneck. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Like that kind of stuff. But probably like I touched on the MCP stuff earlier. That's super exciting. I think that's going to be thing that I'm really looking forward to is sort of like expanding our API layer. So we're API first. We're not building like this tool for the sake of it. We're trying to think about how other people can actually use it, not just Rubica CRM users. Like how can other people tap into this API or how can we roll it out at a scalable level? And building out that sort of that MPC server-side infrastructure is going to be really fun.
It is. It totally is. I think for me, what excites me a great deal is RetireMap in particular. So being able to bring modeling as an API service, and a massive shout out to Eric and Andrew and Ivan and Jordan of the team at RetireMap for what they've done there. But just being able to, once again, zoom out and think about your tech stack in a more modular way. We've been so conditioned to, I need one tool, or now I have one tool and I'm now a hostage and I'm no longer a customer. So being able to have the ability just to pick and choose. And we went down, for example, the Voyant path because they had that integration, but it actually didn't work out to be the best solution. So it's just so refreshing and so empowering to know that you can, not at a, you know, moment's notice, it's definitely not as easy as that, but you can swap out and actually truly plug and play your tech stack based on what you need or do not need. Really easy examples of what we sort of tend to lean on are, you know, you might change your text message service or your payment rails or the example I love the most is moving away from DocuSign to our wonderful friends at Anitra, who we once again built a really deep integration there too. But yeah, to close, mate, look, I still just genuinely cannot, I could not fathom that part two was going to be us coming together, and a lot has changed in that time. I couldn't be happier. You are the bee's knees, mate. You are a breed of your own, pun intended. This was my baby, but in terms of how this was born, but you're not the stepfather, you're the father who stepped up. So I really appreciate everything you do, mate, and I can't wait for this year and rolling this out to more firms as we go forward. So thanks for your time, mate. I really appreciate it.
Of course, mate. Thank you. It's exciting. So, yeah, cheers.